Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your computer today to begin the show. We're talking through some of the most common reasons why your computer could be running slowly, and also the smaller maintenance things you can do to prevent that from happening. Our guest, Jesse LeGrew, back with us once again. Jesse's an information security architect at Madison College's Technology Services Group. He designs and develops and implements security standards and protocols. Jesse LeGrew, good to have you back.
It's good to be here.
I'll tell you what, as you listen to Jesse talk, you may have a computer problem that pops to mind. Is your computer running slowly? Do you have questions about memory and storage, maybe having some tech problems? Give a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Well, Jesse, just like anything else, computers need some basic maintenance to keep them running their best. What kinds of things should we be thinking about to keep up with our computers?
You know, there are always the regular things that no one likes to do. One of them is software updates. They can kind of be a challenge when you want to get a lot of stuff done, and you know they're in the background, just kind of pestering you. Please update me. Please update me. But many times those updates do offer fixes for software, and sometimes they actually offer fixes that make your computer a little bit faster due to issues that companies resolve with their applications that are doing something you wouldn't otherwise want them to do. And outside of that, I'd also recommend anyone, it's kind of like a lot of things right now with house cleaning. If you're around your house a lot or your apartment a lot, you might find you have a lot of things you really don't need. It's a great thing to take a look at in terms of your computer as well, not just to clean up the software that might be running on your computer. You know, if you don't need it, go ahead and uninstall it. That does help to free up some resources for other applications or for other uses. And you can also take a look at the data that you're storing. Looking at kind of security and confidentiality, the data that we all store, if you really don't need it, go ahead and, delete that data. And it also minimizes any kind of risk if somebody were able to get onto your computer. So there's a lot of that house cleaning where, just make sure that, you only have what you need on your computer. It helps to keep your computer running smoothly, and it actually gives you a better idea of, what should be running on your computer. So if you do see something unusual, it'll at least give you a better indicator. And there's a variety of applications that can help you, run scans in your computer, for a lot of personal devices, like Super Anti-Spyware, CCleaner, Spybot Search and Destroy, and there are a variety of others that help to look for anything that you might not need on your computer that it can remove. That also includes maybe, tracking information you wouldn't want, individuals to have. But it can help to keep your computer up and running smoothly on a day-to-day basis.
And that's pretty much why our computers slow down, because we've got so much maybe now junk on our computers?
Yeah, that can definitely be a part of it. And when you're using your computer, one of the things you don't really realize is in the background, there's a lot of stuff running. Whether it's Mac OS, Windows, or any other operating system, there's just a lot of maintenance that kind of happens in the background that you really don't know about it. Some of it you really need, some of it you may not. And some of that comes bundled with the software that we install. And if we only use a piece of software once, that software might still be doing something, and it could be causing a negative impact on your computer. If you do it once, it's usually pretty straightforward, and you may not notice anything. But you do that over time, and all of a sudden you have 100 applications that are installed on your computer that you don't use. Any one of them may have something in the background still doing something, whether it's updates or, a regular process that you originally intended but completely forgot about. Over time, just like anything else, clutter can cause some chaos. And so it's always a good idea to take a look and see, do I really need this? Get rid of it if you don't. But then it simplifies your maintenance in the future going forward. If you do that once a month or once a year, it's much, much easier to keep up with that than doing it, you know, once every 2 years, because then you have to think back way, way in the past. I'm not sure if I actually need this. I don't even know why I downloaded it. So now I'm not even sure what's going to happen when I uninstall it. So doing that more frequently is going to help, you know, just like house cleaning. It's much better to keep that maintenance and doing it on a regular basis to help keep things running smoothly and giving you a better idea of what your computer is actually doing.
Chuck in Zion has a question that relates to all of this. So let's go there. Chuck, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi there.
What's on your mind?
In regard to the software update, I get on my phone, but I'm sure it's with the computers also, is you get it saying that your system needs to be updated and it takes control of your device. How do we really know that the system, or if it's a hacker or some kind of spyware, you know, there's no indication and we all just automatically hit yes. I always question, what is it, who's really sending it?
Mm-hmm. That's an excellent question. So the biggest challenge with anything, all the technology we use, is understanding what does normal look like? How do I know that the software update prompt that I'm getting is actually for a valid piece of software? Phones are actually even a little bit more challenging just because you have a variety of different phones out there. So those prompts look a little bit different from phone to phone. I think that's one of the benefits when looking at a device like an iPhone, where everything is very consistent in terms of from device to device. You kind of know what you're looking for. Really, the only note I can kind of give, if it's an iPhone, it should be fairly consistent. Apple does have it documented. I would actually even recommend just looking at the manufacturer, whether it's for software or hardware, look at their website to actually, they'll usually have screenshots. What does my software update look like? And for Apple, it's consistent. For Android and a lot of other devices, it may change from provider to provider, but usually they'll have that documentation available. But you can also ask, once you do purchase a device, you know, what does that software update screen look like? Another good way to actually get a good indication of whether it's normal, use the software update mechanism built directly into your device. So you can always say cancel on a prompt that you get, and then you yourself can go back to the software update feature, which is usually in system or, you know, it might be control panel. It depends on the device that you're using. But you can actually go into that built-in software update portal and then execute that command yourself, stating, you know, go outside, go to the internet, tell me if I have any updates that are available. Then you can at least be more sure that it's the company that you would want to do those updates for. If you are using an Android, Google Play is generally what's doing those updates for you automatically, and that's also a software setting on the device itself. Same thing with iPhones, they have the App Store. So it's about at least knowing those crucial points where you might need updates. And if you're ever really not sure, just hit cancel, go to the software update feature built into your device or your operating system, and that will at least allow you to be more certain that you're getting what you need to get, and it's not something that should be something to be worried about.
All right, good question. Thank you, Chuck. Dan in Sauk City, your turn. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, good morning, Larry. Jesse, thanks for taking my call. My question regards a Wi-Fi setup. I just got a new router and updated my computer, and I'm having trouble getting the Wi-Fi set up. I get a weak signal on the main network, but I do have a Wi-Fi extender, which gives me the option for a 2G EXT or a 5G EXT, and when I try to load those, and I keep getting an authentication failure on that, and I'm trying to figure out how I get the password for those, you know, for those networks.
And what kind of internet provider do you have?
It comes through the phone line. It's not really dial up. It's supposed to be high speed. It's like, you know, 60 megabytes or something like that. So, like I said, it comes through the phone line. It doesn't go through a regular cable modem or anything like that.
Okay. And did you get the that wireless extender, did you get that from your internet provider?
No, that's something I bought. I've had for a while. It's a Netgear extender I bought years ago, but it seems to work fine.
Okay. If it is, what could be, depending on how the Netgear is set up, one thing you might want to do is actually reset it to its defaults so that you can get back in and reconfigure it from scratch. Usually at the back or the bottom of most home routers or wireless access points, there's kind of a little button on the back, and it usually has reset that you can actually see. You can take a paperclip, is usually just about the right tool to get in there, and you can actually push the button in usually for about 5 seconds. It will usually reset the device back to defaults, meaning you can log back in with that device and reset it up from scratch. It could be it just has settings that you really don't need anymore that you have to set up again, and then you can reset it for a new password that you can log into wireless and then log into the administration interface. And if you do have internet access, at least on one of your devices, you should be able to pull up the manual directly from Netgear on how to do that with your device and what are the steps to run through in order to reconfigure it. That's probably a good first step. The nice thing to do with that, there also might be software updates for the device. Who knows, there could have been an issue that a software update actually fixed. So resetting it will allow you to get back in there so you can change settings. I'd also look at that same time to see if there are any software updates available for that extender unit to help you get back in. Once you do that, then at least you can reconfigure it, and I think you'll be able to reconnect again.
I often wondered if they were really thinking paperclip when they put that when they put that little hole in there. They go, well, a paperclip will fit in there. There you go, Dan. You think they were?
Yeah, it's an odd one. A lot of times, a pen tip will also work, and I think that was one of the items. But a lot of people also don't like to get ink on the devices that they're trying to reset. So, yeah, paper. A handy device for anyone looking for any kind of computer or cell phone maintenance.
Jesse LeGrew, our guest today, information security architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. I'm Larry Mueller. Natalie Guyette, our producer, Tyler Ditter, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at your computer today here on the Ideas Network, Larry Mueller with my guest, Jesse LeGrew, of Madison College's Technology Services Group. Questions, give a call at 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Let's take another call. Katie in Janesville will give you a chance to join. Hi, Katie.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have an older computer that I would like to be able to kind of clean up some of the pictures and videos and stuff that we have on it before it decides to really crash and die and not come back to life again. What kind of advice as far as a specific type of a thumb drive, or what would I be looking for, in those devices that say that they'll pull off all your pictures and, sort out through the duplicates but keep them in the same folders, those kinds of things. What would I be looking for, and how much storage, that type of thing.
Okay, what do you think, Jesse?
And right now I'm trying to think of some good applications that will kind of do deduplication for you. That can actually be kind of a tricky one, because I know I'm also guilty of this. I might save one thing in one place, but then I'll copy it and paste it somewhere else, and so I have, not just one copy of a picture, but I might have 10. And I know there are some backup applications that will do that for you. Many of the hard drives that kind of come out there, usually external hard drives, will have some backup software in it. Microsoft Windows also does have backup software built in, so does Mac OS, and that could be at least a good option to back up your computer. Most of the time, it does depend on what storage space you actually have on your computer. So if you do use a PC, one thing I'd recommend doing is Using an application that will help you understand how much storage you're actually using on your account, you can actually do that within, you know, the My Computer or this PC. It'll show you how much data you're storing and how much data you have free. The downside is that it also includes all the software you have installed. So it's a little bit biased in terms of, you know, how much storage you want, because you're not going to back up programs. You really just want your data. And one of the programs I've liked to use to actually understand better, you know, what data I'm storing is called Windirstat, Windirstat. It's more of a techie tool, and there's a variety of other options out there. TreeSize, I believe, has a free product that's also available. But it gives you an idea. Here's the files that I'm storing, and here are some of the potential duplicates that I'm also storing on my computer. In terms of backing it up, really, if it's, you know, mainly stuff in your My Documents or My Pictures or desktop folder, you can easily drag and drop that to a flash drive or to a hard drive. You just need to know, you know, exactly how much storage you might need to purchase. And Windirstat or TreeSize will definitely help you with that, at least on a Windows PC. There are similar applications on Mac OS as well, and there are a lot of other command line tools, but there's free applications out there that will allow you to do that in a graphical interface to give you a better understanding. In terms of like what kind of flash drive or hard drive, it could be just about anything. The storage right now is extremely inexpensive. Just about anything you get is probably going to be more than what most people need anyway. I would just recommend, if you do want to store it long term and kind of archive it, storage does fail. So I would recommend making multiple copies of it, or also considering using a cloud backup strategy. And that could be using a service that you might already be using today. It could be OneDrive. It could be iCloud. It could be Dropbox. There are so many services out there right now. We probably all have like three different storage accounts we're not aware of that we could be using. And that actually might give you enough storage space, at least in that cloud area, to back up everything, and then later you can make a upload to a flash drive or to an external hard drive as well. So there's a ton of options. One, I would take a look just to see how much storage space you have, then purchase based off of that. A flash drive is probably going to be fine. I would recommend making more than one copy, especially if it's something you want to make sure you have long term. And having a cloud backup as well gives you a little bit extra security, or at least in terms of knowing that it is going to be available, which means you can also access it from different devices as well. So a few different options to consider, but the first thing is just understanding, you know, how much data do I need, and then kind of go from there.
Good luck, Katie. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Sheila in La Crosse, we'll go to you now. Hi, Sheila.
Hi there. I have a Dell Inspiron 13 laptop, and all of a sudden my sound keys and my fast moving back and spacebar keys stopped working. Is there any tip that I can do to get them back?
What I'd probably recommend, I'm guessing they probably don't work at all, and so keyboard failures can be a little bit challenging. One thing I'd recommend, and this is really only a workaround, but at least can give you an indication of whether the computer itself is working fine, is plug in an external keyboard if you have one, just to make sure that you can use at least the space bar and the other keys normally when you're using the computer with an external keyboard. That can also help you determine whether there is a stuck key or something else that might be happening. Kind of if you're doing that as well, there is an on-screen keyboard that Windows does have. If it does have a stuck key or something, it can actually be a good tool to tell you if there's a stuck key there. So it'll at least test to see if Windows or something else is having a problem. Outside of that, there's not a lot you can really do if the keyboard itself has a failure, outside of replacing the keyboard. And generally, the keyboards are fairly inexpensive and do not take very long to install. Most of those keyboards for a lot of the consumer laptops are generally user installable, meaning you can actually go through a manual and actually install it yourself. So I'd recommend even contacting Dell to see if they would have a part available. I know you can get them from a variety of vendors as well. And if you know somebody even just moderately tech savvy, they might be able to replace the keyboard for you. But the first thing I do, plug in an external keyboard, see if things seem to function. It could allow you to limp along at least for a short period of time. And then if you do see that's working fine, that keyboard replacement is likely going to resolve the issue.
There you go, Sheila. Thank you so much for calling. Rick in South Range, we're on to you now. Hi, Rick.
Good morning. I just purchased a new HP laptop computer, and of course it came with things that I wasn't necessarily interested in. And my most serious question, because I'm haunted with it almost daily with a pop-up, McAfee came with it, and of course HP, very small letters, says recommended. But Windows 10 has its own antivirus software. I think it used to be called Defender, and now it's Windows Security. Is it really necessary to go out on the market and purchase an antivirus software program as opposed to just trusting Windows Security?
Yeah, that's a really good question. The Windows Security tools have definitely evolved over time, and they're much, much better than they were even, you know, 5 years ago. I would say that Windows Defender that's built in does have a variety of great tools and is sufficient for most needs. Generally, I'd also recommend for a lot of that kind of security software, usually limiting the software that you have on your computer in that case is easy, because sometimes antivirus programs can kind of fight over each other, which can create you problems as well. And a lot of the subscription services that kind of come built into many devices usually have a trial period. You know, you get the first year for free. After that, you have to pay for it. Sometimes they do have additional features that can be useful. They might have a VPN service or a password manager or some other kind of service you might find beneficial that actually could justify spending a little bit of money for it. But just from the antivirus perspective, I think it would be fine to, you know, uninstall the software, use the built-in Windows Security Center, Windows Defender tool, which gets updated by Microsoft and can do regular scans for issues on your device. So I think Windows Defender that's built in is a good product. There are other products that do other things. So you could find a benefit from some of it, but I wouldn't say that you would need to purchase that renewal from McAfee. I think the Defender tool will help you, unless you know you did see that there was something else in there that might give you personally a different benefit.
Good luck, Rick. Thank you so much for calling. Pam in Green Bay, your turn now. Hi, Pam.
Thank you. Good morning. My Wi-Fi on my computer is an older gateway. Went down a couple days ago. The Windows Network Diagnostics says problem with wireless adapter or access point, and the local area connection adapter is not working properly. My computer is updated to Windows 10, but I'm at a loss as to what does this mean.
Hmm.
Do you have other wireless devices at home that do appear to be functioning properly?
No.
Okay. In that case, it could be an issue. You know, usually in this case, there could be a couple problems. It could be the wireless adapter you have on your computer. It could be the wireless access point that you're using for your general internet access. And it could be a few different things in between, including, you know, software on your computer or something else that's a little bit buggy. Do you have another device that you can test to see if your home wireless is functioning?
Phone or something?
Well, I have an Uma phone that's not, it's connected to the same router modem, and that's down also. So I just disconnected that to see if that might be the problem, and redid the troubleshooting, and I still get the same message.
Okay. It does sound to me like it's likely a hardware or software failure from your actual wireless access point, especially since it's more than one device that's having the issue. One thing I'd recommend is turning those devices off, and you might have already done this through the standard troubleshooting. Turn those devices off for, you know, about a minute, and then turn them back on to see if it resolves or helps with the issue. Otherwise, what I'd recommend doing, if you did get the wireless access point through your internet provider, I would actually recommend contacting them, because often they may have a replacement they can give you for the device. If it's not, I'd probably consider looking at a different replacement device, or even if somebody's able to try and connect to your wireless to test it again. But it kind of does lead me to believe it may be the wireless access point, since you have multiple devices that aren't working.
All right. Pam, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email at ideas@wpr.org. Reggie in Oshkosh, we move on to you now. Hi, Reggie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is, I have an older Acer computer. You know, I've updated the graphics card, RAM, and hard drive. And then 2 years ago, I had to do the hard drive again. And now I'm getting, and I have a partition just for Windows programs, but Windows is acting slow again. Am I looking at a hard drive issue, possibly a motherboard issue? What could be the problem here?
Yeah, and the slowdown could be a variety of things. It could be software, it could be hardware. So one of the recommendations I would have would be to go into, it sounds like you're more computer savvy, so I'd recommend actually taking a look at a performance monitor on your device, which is usually available in the task manager for Windows 10. But it can kind of tell you how all the different components on your computer are working, you know, how hard your CPU is working, how much network connectivity is going through, and, you know, also what kind of disk utilization you're getting from your hard drive. If you see some of those being a little abnormal, where the disk doesn't seem to either be able to get up to the utilization it usually had before, you know, it could be indicative of a hardware failure, but it could also be different components as well. So I'd at least look at that from some of the hardware perspective, because it'll give you some other data to take a look at. I'd also recommend looking at some other software programs just to do a scan of your computer, whether it's Super Anti-Spyware, Malwarebytes, CCleaner, just to see if there's software running in the background that might be doing something that you wouldn't want it to. You should also get that from the task manager as well, where you can actually go on the details tab. You can sort by the CPU and see, you know, is something using 70% of my CPU most of the time? If it is, it's likely that's the software that's causing you an issue. I also have seen where if you are running out of disk space, it can actually cause a high CPU usage because some of the Windows components are trying to do things, and without the disk space, they can't. So they kind of fight back and forth with each other. So it could still be hardware or software. I would just basically take the data you have available on your computer to see which one it might be. If you don't see anything weird running on your computer, if CPU doesn't not seem to be high, memory usage doesn't seem to be high, I'd probably lean more towards a hardware issue. And in that case, take a look at your hard drive usage. If the input-output data values seem about normal, and usually you can see this from the hard drive, it'll tell you what it can handle in terms of input and output. If it doesn't seem to be hitting those thresholds, you know, it could be an issue with the hard drive failing, or it could be memory or something else is not able to send enough data to it. So it could be memory as well. So you kind of have to go through all the little components and gather the data and see where it might be. But software is generally what I'd check first. Next, I would start checking hardware. If you have a lot of memory on your computer, uninstall one memory one stick of memory, keep one in, depending on how many sticks you have. That can also help you troubleshoot over time. If you notice performance is better when you take one stick of memory out, that stick of memory might actually have an issue or the slot that it was in. So hopefully you get something right away when you take a look. If not, it's the long-term game of troubleshooting over time. Do something, see if it helps. If it doesn't, change one other thing. Then the key is change one thing at a time. If you do multiple things at a time, you actually don't really understand what fixed the issue. So it's crucial just to change one thing and see what happened.
Good luck, Reggie. Thank you. Grant emailed to share an app he recently bought to keep his Macs running smoothly. It's called Daisy Disk. He says it identifies exactly what's on hard drives and where the files are. It identified loads of old, unneeded files that were no longer useful. He says it's easy to use, and he made it a regular part of his monthly maintenance routine. So Daisy Disk, are you familiar with that, Jesse?
I haven't used that before myself, but I just took a quick look, and it actually does have a lot of cool visualizations, too, which is similar to Winderstat and a lot of other applications. But it does exactly what you need to. They do actually have a paid version of the software, and so that'll be one of the items. So is, you know, consider, is it something you want to purchase or not? But if it's a one-time fee and it's something you're doing regularly, it's probably worth it. But it is able to give you a nice snapshot of what you have on your computer, which I think is what most people need, because if you give all the details, it gets kind of overwhelming. So it's a nice little program to have, and a lot of people do enjoy it.
Let's see. We have another question. Evan from Adelson, Wisconsin, has a question about VPN. There are many different options when it comes to purchasing a VPN provider. He's wondered what features to consider when shopping for a VPN. He says the reason he'd like to purchase one is because he wants to watch Packer games on services he's purchased in the U.S. but are not offered when he's out of the country.
Yeah, and that's a common use for VPN services. So there's a lot of reasons to have a VPN service. One, it can allow for a little bit more privacy of the connection that you have, in addition to allowing connections to other locations. Which could give you access to other content. You know, a lot of companies do this because you can VPN into your company and you can access internal resources. So in this case, it's very, very similar into kind of that use case. In terms of VPN solutions, from there, it's really, does the VPN service have the capability of connecting in the region where you want to connect to? For example, if you want to connect to a network in Germany, does the VPN service support that? So that's one thing I'd take a look at, is where do they have their VPN connections located in. Outside of that, for VPN services, I usually like to take a look in this, but pretty much every company, but terms of service and privacy policies, just to understand kind of what they will share with others, or how your connection might be secured, just to make sure that your data itself is safe. And then I'd also look at reviews and notes from other individuals, you know, that are using a variety of these VPN services. There's a ton of options out there, but there are definitely a chunk of very, very common VPN services that are widely used and more commercial. I would be careful of VPN services that you do not see a lot of information for, or that there do not seem to be a lot of users for, because there's a little bit more uncertainty in terms of what that offering might be. Take a look at the locations, take a look at their privacy policy just to make sure your data is secure, and take a look at customer reviews, see how well it's utilized and whether people like it for, you know, even in particular your use case, because there are others with the exact same use case for using a VPN service.
Rick in Rhinelander, what's on your mind?
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I had a program years ago that Seagate offered. It was a very simple Windows program that allowed you to back up your files very simply. It essentially had the same format as File Explorer. It was an obvious folder-based system. You would check the folders you wanted backed up. You'd simply plug in your hard drive, your external hard drive, and it would back up those folders. And then once they were backed up, you would plug it in the next day, and whatever files had changed, it would simply compare those and back them up. And it gave you the choice whether to encrypt or not. It does no longer exist, is my understanding. And every other offering that I find is rather complex, expensive, and has more features than what I need. Is there another simple backup program like that available?
And that's a good question. So the backup solutions can be a little bit different. It also depends on whether you want to have a local backup, so a backup to a hard drive or to a flash drive, or if you also want something to, for example, a cloud service. And a lot of those cloud services will actually back up your computer to the cloud, and they'll do it in an automated fashion. CrashPlan, a long time ago, which they are no longer doing, I think, personal backups, was a great option where it actually does backups in pretty much every 15 minutes. So you get a large variety. Right now, there is a cloud-provided service called iDrive, which you have it installed. It will actually upload it to the cloud. And I believe it also has multi-factor authentication, which is, if you are using any kind of cloud backup, is something I'd recommend. For the local backups, I probably still would lean on the built-in backup utilities within Windows or Mac OS. The Seagate utility, and for those that don't know, Seagate's a hard drive manufacturer, so they have the software kind of built into their product. You might get one from a different hard drive manufacturer that's updated, but I would also take a look at just the built-in backup features that are built into Windows. See how that works for you. Usually you need Windows to restore it, so it can create some challenges with just viewing the files. But it's at least an option that you can try right now without needing to purchase anything.
There you go, Rick. Thank you so much. And Jesse, thank you so much for joining us today. A little shorter version than normal, but I really appreciate your time and look forward to our next visit. I think you're back October 12th. We'll do it again.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you so much. Jesse LeGrew, Information Security Architect in Madison College's Technology Services Group. He'll be back, and we will talk with him again about computer issues. Coming up, another issue of edition of Mondays with Mike. Mike Crane and Hannah Haynes joins us as well. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.